Welcome back, and joining us now is Tony Arterburn, a longtime friend and a big supporter of the program. Again, wisewolf.gold is there to help you if you want to get gold, silver, or even Bitcoin. And Tony has set up davidknight.gold to take you there so that he knows that you come through us. But it's always great to have Tony on. He certainly understands what is happening on the very important financial side. Thank you for joining us, Tony.
Always great to be here, David. I was thinking the other day when you were talking about the G7 meeting in Hiroshima to plan their new world order. I thought, well, gosh, you know, Janet Yellen and Jerome Powell and all the other banksters should go to Jekyll Island to tell us what's next for the dollar.
I know. But the nuclear war comes first. I think that's why they went to Hiroshima. It is crazy what's happening now. And let me show you this. I know that you've got some things that you want to talk about, but I want to get your response to this. We know that this is coming, and they've been rolling this out in various ways. This is a bank out of the UK, NatWest. Take a look at this. Is somebody took a picture of this, and basically what it is saying is, looking to withdraw cash, our primary aim is to keep customers safe and secure. Our branches follow our processes carefully to achieve this. This will include asking you questions about the purpose of your cash withdrawal. Why do you need that? We may also ask for supporting documentation, such as an invoice. This helps us to validate the withdrawal as genuine and protect you against fraud. And this is all about protecting you. And by the way, they are going to limit the amount of money that you could take out. Again, this is in the UK. They're limiting it to about £2,000. I don't know, maybe that's about $2,500, $2,600, I'm guessing, within a 24-hour period. And they have, unless you give them advance notice of 24 hours that you're going to be taking this out, and then they're going to want to have a lot of documentation for that. That's where we're headed, isn't it, Tony?
Oh, absolutely. There's a war on cash.
Yeah.
There's a war on individual sovereignty, and the banks are carrying out the orders of the governments, you know, to stop the flow of cash. We saw that starting really here with COVID. Mm-hmm. But actually, before that, with the Patriot Act, that's something they weren't able to do, get the banks to monitor cash withdrawals, through the years. They wanted to make that happen after Oklahoma City. It took 9/11 to sneak that into the Patriot Act. So the banks watched that. You have to make appointments a lot of times if you're going to withdraw cash. Banks will say they don't have cash.
Yeah.
Which is, it shocks people because they're not used to withdrawing cash. I have a lot of customers that come in here and they're trying to get cash out of the bank. And I said, well, why don't you just bring me a cashier's check? I mean, honestly, people want to be more honest, but I think the bank's tracking you. When you try to use cash, you're throwing up red flags. Yeah. And that's just the world we live in today. And, you know, the inverse is also true, David. The inverse is just as true. Let's say that, you know, I've been spending time in Texas, so I don't have anybody making deposits for me. The bank doesn't like it when I come back a week later. And, you know, my staff has taken all the deposits. They don't like that. They're like, where is this coming from? Why is there so much cash? They don't like it. So again, I think it's ramping up. There's a war on cash. You got to be aware. You got to ask your bank if you haven't withdrawn cash in a while, you ought to ask your bank what their policies are. And I will tell you also that it's the national banks that are the worst.
Yes.
The national banks, the big banks that have the cash. Mm-hmm. Are the worst about it. I've had good luck, and I won't say the name of the bank that I use, but I use a bank here in Missouri, and I use a bank in Texas that are both real good. Mm-hmm. They haven't given me any real problems, but every once in a while I'll look in my account, and there'll be an analysis charge of like $180 because I'm depositing cash, and they have to track that. They have to fill out forms. So you know, I'm on the radar.
Yeah.
There's no way for me to be off the radar at this point.
Well, and that is why they want to get rid of the regional banks and small and medium-sized banks, right, is because the big banks will do their bidding. But, you know, when you talk about the cash stuff, I've said it for the longest time, Dennis Hastert, a guy who was a known pedophile before they even ran him for Congress. He was a wrestling coach. He's a pedophile. And then they elevate him to become the Speaker of the House, stays there the longest amount of time. And they didn't come after him for being a pedophile. They said, well, statute of limitations is over. We'll just change statute of limitations. It's easy enough to do. Instead, they came after him for what should not be a crime, the fact that he tried to structure his withdrawals so that he would not be noticed. Because when he started withdrawing cash to pay to a blackmailer, who is, you know, now grown up and blackmailing him over this, when he started pulling it out, they started asking him questions. He didn't want them asking questions about what he was going to do with his cash. I mean, it's kind of funny in this article from Mark Jeftovic, Tony. He says, here in Canada for the last few years, he said, even before COVID, the big four banks have been routinely asking you why you're taking out cash. And he says, so you can tell them pretty much anything. You can say, well, because I want it, or you can say none of your business, or you can say, I want to blow it all on booze and hookers. Or you could say, if you're Dennis Hastert, I got to pay off the person who's blackmailing me because I was a pedophile. You know, he could have just told him that. And it's like, oh, okay. We can't come after you for being a pedophile, but we will come after you for taking the money out in a way that we don't ask you questions. And that was the most outrageous thing about it, to make a crime out of something that should be a crime and to let the real crime skate by.
Yeah, the irony of that, too, because he helped push the legislation through for the Patriot Act, yes, which is to monitor the bank withdrawals and have the banks report on you.
That's right.
I try. You look, you know, everything I do is within the letter of the law. I tell people, if you've got more than $10,000 in cash, I would be required to fill out a cash transaction report and send that to the IRS. I just don't take cash over $10,000. I don't do that. I think, you know, again, if you're looking to buy gold and silver, you can do small amounts on cash and stay under the radar. That's your legal right to do. But if you try to go and make a major purchase and just use cash and go to your bank every day and withdraw just under the limit and then deposit with me, you're going to get on a radar.
Yep.
It's going to happen. It makes you look worse. The best thing to do is just take out a cashier's check or send a wire or do something like that. You're already on it. I mean, they're not going to. Buying gold and silver is legal. I mean, it's not something, you're not doing something that's under the table that's bad. But I would say that if you have a significant amount, you're going to understand that the bank's tracking you. And I don't think it really matters even if it gets to the $10,000 mark or not. It's just structured withdrawals in general. So like if I have cash, I mean, I can't play that game. I'm just going to have, they have to fill out a CTR, which is a cash transaction report on me every time. I mean, that's what I'm doing every week because that's how much cash I have.
Yeah.
But I tell people I'd much prefer a cashier's check, much prefer a wire.
Well, of course, everybody's under their radar. We get under the radar when we talk, you know, and that's the goal. And they keep extending their radar, getting more and more powerful radar and more and more antennas and receivers everywhere all the time. And that's what we should be. We have to not run from that. We have to be aware of that and realize that that is the reality of what they're trying to establish. And that they're also, the purpose of this cashless society, of course, as you and I have always talked about, as we had John Stossel and DeSantis talking about it, is to push us into a CBDC. And in this article, Jeff DeVick says, well, you know, that's the value proposition for it. As we go into this big recession, the value proposition for CBDC is going to be universal basic income. And they've already started talking. That is the major thrust of Sam Altman, the guy who is OpenAI CEO. I mean, he's a big venture capitalist, but he has focused. He likes the OpenAI so much that he's made that his key focus. But his secondary focus, which may now become the key focus, is the WorldCoin thing. And the WorldCoin is tied to a global ID as well as universal basic income. And that is a prescription for absolute slavery. And he is right there. And he was right there at Bilderberg this last week, pushing all this stuff.
Yeah. And the IMF has the Unicoin, you know, that's one of their prototypes.
That's right.
Ultimately, that's what the bankster class, the overlords, that's what they want, is a one world digitized blockchain currency run through their central banks. And it may have regional currencies that link up to it, like the dollar. Mm-hmm. And again, the issue here, and I think they'll be able to sell it with, you talked about universal basic income. You have to open up your wallet, you know, get all your biometrics into the system so that we can guarantee your identity and guarantee your income. But they'll also say something like, we can contract and expand the money supply in real time to protect you. This way, you know, we can fight inflation much better this way. We have all these underground seedy things using cash. You know, the same thing that they say about Bitcoin right now. And they're going after both. They're going after cash. They're going after Bitcoin, and they're using the banks.
Yeah.
And there was that big run on the, you know, after the Silicon Valley Bank and Silvergate, and, you know, that was bailed out by the Fed and by the FDIC. There was a run on smaller banks, and the people didn't take out, and I guess a lot of people did buy gold and silver, but a lot of people just went and put it into some of the larger banks, you know, the five or six. There's about 6,000 or so regional banks. And that's what makes small business work. over this country.
That's right.
And then the big banks want to consolidate those. So there's a lot of psychological warfare, financial warfare going on here, trying to break up and consolidate. And again, the goal there is to piggyback off of the big banks to usher in the central bank digital currency, which will ultimately be leading back to one currency.
That's right. And that's why Senator Frank Nicely here is trying to push a Tennessee public state bank. But of course, he wisely is now calling it the Tennessee Reserve System, because to say we're going to have a state bank, that makes the small and medium-sized banks nervous. They think it's something that's going to compete with them, when it's exactly the opposite. They're going to be put out of business by these big banks and by the Federal Reserve if they don't go this way. But by calling it the Tennessee Reserve System, they look at it and say, well, I know how I interact with the Federal Reserve in terms of, you know, reselling mortgages and this and that, and buying notes. And so that'd be something similar to that. And that is exactly the way that the North Dakota State Bank, the only one that is in existence, that's the way that it operates. And they have a very, very healthy, compared to the rest of the nation, about 5.5 times the number of banks per capita in North Dakota as the rest of the nation. So they have thrived in that kind of an environment. And the bank does not compete with them on loans. It is there as a secondary market if they want to sell the loans. And that really helps them to be able to sell that on a secondary market. But as you're saying, you know, there's all these different coins that are out there. We already have the U.S. and the EU pushing their own central bank digital currencies. And then you've got the IMF and the Bank of International Settlement, each of them with their own idea. And now you've got a bunch of globalist corporations like WorldCoin and other ones that are pushing this as well. It's looking like the only competition that these people have is with each other as to who's going to wind up being the one coin to rule us all.
It reminds me of what happened to the empire of Alexander the Great.
Yeah.
When Alexander died at age almost 33, it didn't go and pass to one other person. Mm-hmm. It was broken into multiple pieces. I think that's what you're going to see. And there's an article about King Dollar up on Drudge. It's linked to Reuters. And again, Reuters getting into the mainstream is talking about de-dollarization, folks. This is why you should pay attention. And again, I don't think the majority of people that are tuned into mainstream media are not understanding what that means. You have to do a little bit of research to find out what does de-dollarization mean for the U.S. economy. And again, you just look at facts and figures, and we've talked about this before, but 2001, 75% of all global transactions or financial went on in dollars. 2021, 20 years later, it was 55%. After we put the sanctions on Russia in 2022, it dipped to, it's 47% and declining, or we've got to be somewhere below 47% now, because it's rapidly declining. The only reason that it hasn't completely lost all cabin pressure is because there really isn't an alternative yet. Mm-hmm. There isn't one alternative, but you see like India using gold to buy Russian oil, you know, bypassing the sanctions, the China using the yuan. And of course, there's all the, you know, the natural gas first on the Shanghai Exchange being done in yuan. So there's Brazil dumping the dollar. All around the world, the central banks are dumping dollars, buying gold, or getting into the yuan, or looking at a host of other currencies. So we're seeing the end of dollarization, of King Dollar. And that is, again, I think we're going to see many different competition, realms of competition in the states. You talked about Tennessee. I think it's great when states deregulate and make gold and silver legal tender. You know, and there's a war on cash. And I assume there will soon be a war on gold and silver that hasn't really caught into made it into the mainstream where the, you know, the mainstream's attacking gold and silver yet. But there will be a time when we'll see that. But to me, gold and silver are cash.
Yeah.
Because gold and silver are money. Mm-hmm. And more and more people, I see people accepting it. I mean, I'm able to make trades in it. It's funny when you're in this business. I had somebody come in the other day. They bought a pre-1933 $20 gold Liberty coin for about $2,160. That's with the premium. And they said, ask them how they wanted to pay. Is it a credit card? And I said, well, I have to charge you a fee. And they said, well, you take Bitcoin? I said, absolutely no fee, because I needed Bitcoin. So it was like a nice between us. There was no banks involved.
Yeah.
You know, there's no checks. There's no nothing. I don't have any fiat currency, but we just, you know, Bitcoin for gold. And I was able to use my Bitcoin I pay a lot of my vendors with it. So again, I think that's where we need to be headed. going into a system where we understand that we are our own banks. Mm-hmm. We can take charge of that. Banks are great for facilitating things like wires and being able to pay bills and things like that. But that's all that they should really do at this point, unless you're, you know, needing to leverage to get a loan for your business or something. But we, the people, can, you know, with things like Bitcoin and with things like gold and silver and having that physical in your hand, we can become our own banks.
That's right. That's right. Did you catch the statements from RFK Jr. at the Bitcoin convention? He had some very interesting things to say. What did you think about what he had to say?
I thought it was wonderful. I watched the entire speech. I wanted to go to the Bitcoin conference. I just didn't have time to setting up this new location. But I watched the entire speech. I thought it was great because he also addressed the environmental issue, which I thought for sure, you know, cryptocurrency was on his no-no list. But when he talked about the Canadian truckers and why he owns Bitcoin now, I thought that was very powerful. So a major presidential candidate, and you know, it's not just the jab that they're keeping him out of the debates for now. I guess I'm pretty clear he's anti-war on a lot of levels. You know, he talks about how the CIA killed his father and his uncle. This guy is not good for the establishment. I mean, I don't agree with all of his politics, but I think he's come a long way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you've played that clip of him. What was it about 13 years ago or so, David?
Yeah.
I first started watching him. He would go on like MSNBC and talk to Joe Scarborough, and he talked to Hannity. He was like the resident liberal, you know. But you played him talking about jailing people.
Yeah.
For being climate deniers. Well, he's come a long way. I saw a clip of him the other day talking about how the climate issue, and he believes in cleaning the environment, but he says the climate issue has been hijacked by people like the World Economic Forum, like the Davos set.
Yeah.
And being used to remake the world into their own image. And so I think he's come a long way.
It'd be interesting to nobody's going to probe him on that. Yeah, I would like to find, well, what changed your mind about, and when did you change your mind about free speech? And was it when they started persecuting you? On the issues that he's chosen to talk about, those are very dangerous issues, all of those, as you pointed out, to the establishment. And so, of course, they're going to punish him, just like they, you know, have us to get us off of there. If you're going to talk about the vaccine and war and the CIA and CBDC, I mean, every one of those checks a box. And so, that's going to get, but what he doesn't want to talk about, and the reason he's running as a Democrat, I think, is because, you know, he hasn't talked about abortion, gun control, the LGBT stuff, and other things like that, and hasn't given, you know, where is he on the environment issue? There's still an uncertainty with me on that, but he did say, you know, you're not going to use the environment as an excuse to get rid of crypto, and he understands that that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to use that, and because that was the fourth, you know, four different areas that Biden wanted all of government to report to him on, and that was the key issue. That was going to be the excuse to shut down crypto. It's going to be the justification to shut it down. He said, you can't use it for that. So that was a very positive thing. I think it was also positive when he talked about the political aspects of it, how it's all just about power. And I don't know if you noticed that he talked about Ross Ulbricht and Silk Road and said that he would seriously look at that and think, because he understands, he's not going to say that he's going to pardon Ross Ulbricht like he did say that he would pardon Julian Assange, but he said, I would take a serious look at it and see if that isn't a persecution that was happening. And he knows that it was persecution. And he knows that they came after him simply to make an example out of him for people that were operating on the dark web being dark in the sense that they can't see everything that's happening, because there's a lot of really, really dark stuff that happens on the regular internet. Not dark from that standpoint, but because of Bitcoin, they wanted to come after him. Bitcoin as much as the dark web aspect of it.
It reminds me, in 2019, I had a visit to my shop in San Antonio by the Department of Homeland Security and somebody from the Justice Department in Texas, the Attorney General's office, and they were looking for a transaction that went through on one of my Bitcoin ATMs about a year prior. Mm-hmm. And we got to talking, and they didn't really understand crypto. So I was explaining to them Bitcoin. They're talking about the illegality of it, how it's used for so much criminality and so on and so forth. And I said, well, you know, there's a coin that dwarfs Bitcoin. I mean, there's a currency that dwarfs it. I mean, it makes it look like nothing. I mean, as far as illegality is concerned, it's used around the world. It's universal, and you can't track it because it's in paper form. They're like, what is it? I'm like, it's the dollar. And just dwarf Bitcoin. It makes it look like a nothing. It's not even a Bitcoin can't compete in the criminality of the dollar, like not even close.
Yeah.
So it's just that they built this myth, you know, especially around something like the Silk Road. I remember when I got into Bitcoin, it's like, oh, is that the drug dealer stuff? Mm-hmm. Well, no good drug. What? Why would you want to be on a permanent blockchain? You know, I mean, there's an open source permanent blockchain to show you where the funds and the coins are going. So, I mean, the Bitcoin is not anonymous.
Yeah,
not really. Okay. I mean, you can protect your coins. And like what, you know, RFK Jr. was talking about having your own wallet, having your own keys, having your own node, like being able to mine Bitcoin from your home or plug in just to help the network.
Yeah,
that should be all of that should be our right. And it's one of the reasons you and I talked a couple of weeks ago about the Texas digital currency backed by gold. Mm-hmm. I'm skeptical of that. And I'm not alone. Joseph P. Farrell, who wrote the book Babylon's Banksters, he came out and just right after you and I had that talk, it was like a day later, he dropped a podcast and said, I'm skeptical. I think this may be a backdoor for like we go, this is the alternative. This is what we'll jump onto. This is, you know, this is backed by gold and it's from Texas. So it's good. And this would be a backdoor for the globalists to get their CBDC.
Yeah.
I mean, we got to be careful when states come up. Why, again, if you read history, you wonder, why is the state involved in currency? I have a global gold standard. I have a global silver standard, you know, especially now in today's technology with things like crypto and decentralized currency. I just don't, when a state starts getting involved, you're talking about politics.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. It's going to bleed into the currency. It does now. Man, I mean, look at who gets targeted by the IRS. You know, is it our leftist groups getting harassed by the IRS, or is it, you know, remember when they had 2012, you know, the documentation that came out of, you know, anything that had the word patriot in it was, you know, they were audited. Mm-hmm. So again, this is weaponized. So anytime the state gets involved in currency, I am very skeptical, if not just completely off board.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause there were a lot of people that were saying that about Bitcoin. They said, oh, this is going to move us towards a digital currency and thing, but that's not associated with the state. I think it's better to take the approaches that DeSantis did to say, well, we're not going to recognize these digital currencies. We're going to change it in the UCC, the Universal Commercial Code, and say that's not a valid form of payment. And so I think it's better to address it that way, or to address it by trying to create parallel structures like Senator Nicely's trying to do here in Tennessee, to say we're going to have a Tennessee Reserve System. It's going to be operate parallel to the Federal Reserve, because these guys either don't know what they're doing or they're trying to burn the system down, that type of thing. So I think it's better to address it that way than to try to come up with a small version of the central bank digital currency, which is what they're doing. And of course, the same thing's being done by Zimbabwe at the same time that Texas is doing it. Hey, we'll come up with a digital currency, a national digital currency that'll be backed by gold. And, you know, so they try to make it legitimate with that. But while we're talking about the dollar, let's talk a little bit about the debt and the deficit and all this melodrama that's going on with that. I like the way that Babylon Bee put it. They had nation unsure how the government not being able to borrow more money is a crisis. Well, they'll just blow it. They'll send it to Ukraine. So it's like one guy says, well, I can sleep better at night knowing that the government is currently blocked from borrowing any more money. I've been sleeping much better knowing my leaders aren't able to continue digging us into a financial hole that my great, great, great grandchildren will never get us out of. That's a load off of my mind.
Can you imagine having a printing press and still losing your credit rating? Like can you imagine that day? You have a printing press and you still can't keep a budget. I'm not afraid of the government shutting down. I don't know about you. I think it's fine. Nobody talks about cutting anything anymore. Nobody talks about balancing anything. That was like a bygone era when you had conservatives so-called talking about the budget and the deficit. Nope. I mean, you really famously, you get Dick Cheney, deficits don't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they do matter. I mean, you reach a certain point. I mean, we've never seen this in our nation's history. And I know this because you can do the math. You can look at, okay, so debt to GDP ratio, you know, is usually, you know, 20, 30, 40% at the highest. I mean, under Reagan, it was like 40%. It's 125% mm-hmm. of debt to GDP and growing. Mm-hmm. You can't outrun that.
That's right.
I mean, it's, and people ask me all the time, what's gold? going to be, this investment? What's silver going to be? I'm like, I don't know where it's going, but I know where the dollar's going because of math and it not being backed by anything, which, you know, I don't want it backed by anything. I think this should get out of the business of currency. I mean, we have several ways that we can pay our, you know, I like the idea of import taxes. I like tariffs. I think that's the government was run by on tariffs for the first, 150 years of our country. And now we've gotten away from that. And it's been a disaster.
Yeah.
So no, I really do feel like we are headed towards something that the country's never seen before, but it won't be these budget fights and stuff. A lot of stuff's happening under the radar too, when they have these kind of stories like this game of chicken. Do you think, is Kevin McCarthy really playing a game of chicken with Joe Biden? I mean,
here's the way I see it.
Wings of the same bird.
Well, the way I see this is, again, it's virtue signaling to their bases and trying to play a gotcha with the other guy. The other guy is going to tank the economy. But if you remember, after the election, when they knew they were going to have a Republican majority, there was a big fight with Kevin McCarthy trying to stop Mitch McConnell from joining with them and saying, yeah, we'll do a budget agreement. So he joined with Schumer and Pelosi and said, all right, here we've agreed on a budget. And Kevin McCarthy and Republicans are saying, wait a minute, you just took away our major bargaining tool for a couple of years now. Well, they managed to find a way to carve this back in, and they're going to use it. The Republicans don't want austerity, and the Republicans don't even really want a balanced budget, I don't think. They want to have a place at the table, a power lever that they can use, and this debt ceiling gives it to them. And that's what that is about. I think that's what it is all about, the fact that they're trying to bring this back in after because the power of the purse is with the Congress, and that's really the only leverage that they've got there. But they're all saying, Paul Krugman repeated that, just like he said, Dick Cheney, saying deficits don't matter. We just have to be able to service it. Well, at the rate that the interest rates are going up and at the rate that they're increasing the deficit, they won't be able to service it indefinitely. That's the whole point.
You go back to testimony from Paul Volcker after he was retired from the Federal Reserve, and he was the one that raised interest rates to the teens after Nixon took us off the gold standard by the Carter administration. Inflation was out of control. But he had a famous testimony before Congress, and he said, it's not really the deficits. It's not really the spending so much as that we don't make anything. We don't produce anything.
Yes, that's right.
And that's what's so dangerous now. I mean, we take for granted the economy runs off of debt. It lives off of debt. It needs it. It's and that kind of the basis for ESG, environmental social governance, is that it's no longer about profit anymore. So that's a dangerous thing here. It's like the economy needs the government to function because it needs all these programs. It needs everything flowing out because that's our lifeblood now, unfortunately. So that's the danger here.
That's right.
As far as ideologically, I don't care if they shut down or not. Sounds good to me. I mean, you can't do much. But I don't think they will. I think this is two wings of the same bird. As far as you're right, though, they're just bargaining chips over what they can get. And, again, nobody's talking about any of the things that would start solving our problems, like ending the American empire, cutting the $1 trillion foreign policy, ending the giant bloated welfare state, auditing the Federal Reserve, like really being fiscally sound. Nobody's talking about that. And it's not going to happen.
We're
all going to have to see power politics pure and simple.
That's right. And, I think the other aspect of it, though, is that Ryan Macon was talking about, he said three myths about this stuff, and one of them that he had was the idea that the U.S. has never defaulted on things. And he says, no, it has. It has defaulted three times. And I thought it was really telling, Tony, when I looked at it, it's like, wow, I hadn't made that. He didn't make the connection to the fourth turning. But when he talked about the three times it happened after the Revolutionary War, as he points out, a new constitution was in place. They defaulted on domestic loans. The federal government renegotiated past debt at less than favorable terms for investors. That's the reason why you had the 14th Amendment, which the Biden administration is saying we're going to misuse that, right? They put the 14th Amendment in there because they knew what had happened at the end of the Revolutionary War, that fourth turning. And so they said, well, you're not going to repudiate the debt because they'd seen that happen at the Revolutionary War. And so they put that in. But even then, he said there was greenback default in 1862. The original greenbacks were $60 million in demand notes. That was in redeemable specie. He said less than 5 months later, in January of 1862, the U.S. Treasury defaulted on these notes, failing to redeem them on demand. And then you had the Liberty Bond default in 1934. Every one of these fourth turnings, they've had a major default. And so the default isn't going to be default of Kevin McCarthy. It's going to be part of the fourth turning, because they're always, you always have economic unrest and you have these wars that happen. And in each one of these cases, it was depression, it was war, other things like that that were causing the default. It's just another reminder of where we are in this cycle of history, I think. It's pretty amazing.
You're absolutely right. And the audience needs to understand, this isn't just politics as usual. And this isn't like when, you know, when Newt Gingrich shut down the government for a little while, you know, this is a much bigger issue.
It is.
Look at the debt in 2000, David, was $5 trillion. Mm-hmm. It's 30 trillion.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. It took it all of our history to get to five, and then it doubles through every president. So this is unsustainable. Mm-hmm. We're going to see the complete collapse of the dollar eventually on some level. And I think they'll use that for a lot of totalitarian programs they want to push through, like CBDC, if we're not careful, if we don't understand what's coming.
That's
but
right.
the dollar is going to lose more and more value. It's going to lose the reserve currency status of the world. So it's up to you, the audience, to figure out what you want to do to protect yourself.
That's right.
I mean, again, this isn't an infomercial. I'm asking a question. So I think it's a good question to ask. What are you going to do when the dollar tanks, when it has its collapse, when it no longer buys the same amount of groceries, because it's not buying the same amount it was 3 years ago.
That's right.
You need to look at that. This is a reality that we're going to have to face. And again, the politics as usual. You talked about fourth turnings. There's always a major change. And this change, as you were talking about earlier in the show, it's the everything. You know, it's war. It's economic. It's sociological. It's spiritual. It's all the things. It's the everything bubble. It's the Hobbesian war of all against all. And, you know, again, we have to ask ourselves, how are we going to survive it?
Yeah.
Can we thrive through it? I'm not a total pessimist here.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's opportunity in this chaos.
Yeah.
To do things to help the community, start a business. I think there's opportunity here, but there's also caution.
And you don't always wind up coming out of a fourth turning with less freedom and liberty. I mean, look at what happened with the American Revolution. It typically does tend towards that, but it can go the other way. And that's what we need to be focusing on. But in order for that to happen, it has to begin with us individually. Each of us has to look after what is going to be happening with ourselves and with our family, and then with our community, then with our state, that type of thing. And again, it goes from me outward. You know, it's this little pebble that is there. And that's only if we take the kinds of preparations that we need to. Only then are we going to be able to have the kind of ability to direct things to make it go up towards liberty instead of down toward tyranny. I think that's the key thing, and a key part of that is to prepare. If you want to prepare, again, davidknight.gold will take you to wisewolf.gold. And Tony has got all kinds of products there. Wolfpack, but you can, you know, you don't have to get into a monthly thing. You can get whatever you want there. But that's also, we talk about that because that's kind of a unique program, and lets people have the opportunity to save on a regular basis. So I think that is a really unique and powerful thing for people to be able to do that on a regular basis. Thank you so much, Tony. Thank you for all you do to help the program. Really do appreciate it.
Thank you, David. Always an honor, sir.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project, to make sure the commoners own nothing, and the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.